This year marks the 100th anniversary of the start of World War I. The Great War was unlike anything the world had ever seen, and it would go on to change the world in many significant and unexpected ways.
And that included the world of literature. According to our next guest, World War I was a turning point for writers across the globe. In the years of the war and the years after, writers channeled their energy into putting their war experiences into words, and that helped usher in a whole new era of literature unlike anything seen before.
Joining us now is Jen Shelton, Associate Professor of English at Texas Tech University. Jen, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks very much.
So before World War I, what was literature like?
Well, literature before World War I had already begun the process of becoming what we now know as modernism. So there was a lot of experimentation going on. There were many manifestos being written that were rejecting the old ways of doing things. A lot of these experiments were technical in nature. So you can think about a text like Joyce's A Portrait of the Artist, which really tried to remake the novel in a new way. And that was published it was written before the war and published right about the time that the war was beginning. So those kinds of movements were already going on before the war ever started in response to a lot of the technological and social changes that came along because of modernity.
Now, World War I is known for being an especially brutal war, millions of lives lost, trench warfare, lots of horrors that, you know, people hadn't seen before, hadn't experienced and lived through. How did writers attempt to capture that?
Well, the big thing they did, and this is a little strange in some ways for us to think about, but the main thing they did was they tried to represent accurately the experience of being in that war and being in the trenches. They tried to portray it as it was and as it felt to them. And this was a profoundly new way to approach writing about war, because before, every time someone wrote something about warfare, it had to be couched in, that there was glory there was honor there, that this was majestic and good and noble. And of course, the soldiers in the trenches, I mean, as you say, it was a horrible existence. You were being shelled night and day. Your clothes were full of lice, and you were rats were walking over, dead bodies sticking out of the sides of the trenches. It was a horrible, horrible existence. In the Flanders area, you were walking in a sea of mud. You had to walk on duck boards in order to avoid drowning in the mud, and so. You know, the soldier writers looked around and said, this isn't noble, this isn't glorious, this isn't honorable, this is hellish, and for what, right? Because, I mean, the other thing that we all know about the First World War, even if we don't know much about it, is that, tens of thousands of lives would be lost and nothing would be gained by this. And so they rejected... You know, when I talk to my students about this, I often use the example of Alfred Lord Tennyson. He writes a poem like The Charge of the Light Brigade, and it's a doomed mission that is all very noble and majestic, and the poem kind of, rockets along with its beautiful little rhythm. And the World War I poets utterly rejected that kind of poetic strategy.
Right, and there was poetry coming out of the trenches, wasn't there, that managed to get around some of the censorship of the brutality that might have applied to other forms of literature.
Yeah, absolutely. People, because it's poetry, right, it's not like a news report, and so you could send your poem to, poems were published in newspapers back then. It's a funny thing for us to think about, but yeah, they were published in newspapers. People sent poems home to their families, and they were published in local journals and so forth. Some poets, like Siegfried Sassoon, was already an established poet before the war began, and so he had a lot of literary connections, and he was able to have his poetry and also the poetry of other people that he met and whose poetry he admired. He was able to have that published in various kinds of newspapers, magazines, and journals. Sometimes these were published in pacifist journals, like the Cambridge Journal. you know, really trying to say this is how horrible this war is, and that's the reason we need to stop it. So it was a way. It was a way to communicate. You know, it's not. It wasn't an esoteric thing that people did just to amuse themselves, but it was a real way to communicate with the people back home and say, you know, this is the horror of this war.
Is it fair to think about this writing as a precursor to war journalism?
It is a precursor to war journalism. And, you know, books like All Quiet on the Western Front, which, you know, is published in 1928, which is a really big year for war memoirs and journals, that writer was a journalist. And so in portraying what he had experienced in the trenches in the most graphic way he could, he's using a lot of journalistic strategies, you know, to make it feel to the reader like this isn't an emotional account, this isn't about what it felt like, this is just what it was, right? And so in that way it really changed war writing, it changed war journalism. It certainly changed even the newspaper accounts at that time. You know, the initial response to the war was, "Hey, hurrah! We're going to war, and we're going to beat whoever the other side is in 3 days, and be back home again by Christmas." But in part because of this this creative writing coming out of the front, you know, even the newspapers began to say, "Oh yeah, you know, here's what's really happening over there," you know, toward the end of the war. You know, and then, of course, there was even more censorship because this was not to the taste of the governments who needed constant renewal of their resources at the front.
And did this leave a legacy of reluctance to get involved in war after World War One because of this documentation of what it was really like there on the front?
Yeah. The big years for war writing were the late 20s and early 30s, and this is just when the things are being set in place that are going to make World War II happen, and all, you know, everyone is reading these things really voraciously. You know, Mary Borden, who's an American writer, had written a book called The Forbidden Zone, which was about the experiences of being a nurse at a front line, kind of MASH-like hospital, and there was All Quiet on the Western Front, and there were tons of memoirs, Robert Graves's Goodbye to All That, and Sassoon's memoir, and Edwin Blunden's memoir came out. And people were reading these things voraciously, and they were looking at this and saying, okay, we fought the last war, and what did we get from it? And, you know, we look at all this horror, look at all these losses, and what did we get? And it made the Europeans in particular very, very, very reluctant to go into another war. Of course, the exception to that would be Germany, which was really punished by the treaty that ended the First World War. And for them, it was a sort of a nothing to lose, I think, kind of feeling.
And, Jen, in our last 30 seconds here, is there a line, a poetry, or an image from this kind of writing that stays with you and really makes you think about what it must have been like?
Well, you know, probably the most famous line is in Wilfred Owen's poem Dulce et Decorum Est. At the end of the poem, he says, you know, he wants children to not hear that old lie that is sweet and right to die for your country. And, you know, it's a really profound statement, I think, from him.
Jen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Jen Shelton, Associate Professor of English at Texas Tech University. She joined us to talk about how World War I has changed the world of literature.